From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Radical Brilliance. Oh, yeah, wait for that. Here's what's happening. Police in Toronto have identified the suspected driver of a van that rammed into a crowd of pedestrians earlier Monday and said that they would not rule out terrorism as a possible motive. The vehicle was driven by a 25-year-old man of Richmond Hill, north of Toronto. He allegedly drove into dozens of people intentionally, killing 10, injuring 15. Sad story there. And the man who cops believe gunned down four people at a Waffle House restaurant in Tennessee has now been arrested just after an hour after the cops admitted that he led police on a chase in a stolen BMW days before his killing spree. Travis Rankin, 29 years old, taken into custody just after 1 p.m. Eastern time. He was arrested in a wooded area not far from his apartment. A citizen's tip led to the arrest of the suspect, who had been on the run in the area since early Sunday morning. Authorities said they followed Rankin onto a pathway into a wooded area where an officer saw his face and confirmed his identity. The officer ordered him to the ground, and he did so immediately. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis said there are reasons for optimism following the stunning announcement by North Korea late last week that it would suspend its nuclear and long-range missile tests ahead of a potential summit between leaders of the United States and North Korea beginning in late May or early June. Eight sick prisoners in Nome, Alaska have been provided a clue to authorities about the origin of a nationwide outbreak of dangerous E. coli infections from romaine lettuce. And U.S. officials said they still haven't pinpointed the source of the contamination. Instead, the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are sticking with a broad warning to all of us, telling us to throw away romaine in any form that comes from Yuma, Arizona, from a growing region there, and to avoid eating romaine of unknown origin. Most of the romaine sold in the United States during the winter is grown in the Yuma region. Let's check in with food safety coach Jeff Nelkin. Jeff, first of all, tell us a little bit more about E. coli and then how it may have gotten contaminated on all this lettuce.
Well, you know, E. coli many times is found in the intestinal tract of animals. This is 0157. And, you know, we've had some incidents. You know, what happened in Canada, they nailed down to romaine, but here in the United States, they're still not 100% sure that it's romaine-driven. CDC and FDA are also leaning towards the multiple greens, but they think the episodes are pretty much over. So, you know, what you're seeing is the aftermath of a couple of weeks ago. But if people have any questions, they certainly should, you know, save their receipts. And if they have any situations where they have any bloody diarrhea or abdominal cramps or, you know, any kind of symptoms like that, they certainly should seek medical attention.
Jeff, you've always said wash, wash, wash. Does that chase off the E. coli?
Well, part of the problem is that we're finding now that E. coli can also penetrate into the soil and from the soil to the interior of produce. So, you know, once it's inside the produce, there's washing it is not going to move it out once it's in the cellular walls.
So you can get sick. Can it kill you?
Yes, it could. You know, there's a form of it that gets into the kidneys, and the kidney cells start to break down. And, you know, then we have to go on dialysis, and if dialysis doesn't work, people die. So, yes, it can be life-threatening.
Okay, always good to hear your voice. Jeff Nelkin, our food safety coach. A Florida girl fighting for her life days after she swallowed pool water in an incident that her mother has described as a freak accident. Elenia Grace, a four-year-old from Sarasota, is now receiving oxygen therapy at the Sarasota Memorial Hospital after ingesting pool water on April 14th. Jeez. Connecticut University students and closes Monday as norovirus outbreak sickens 100 students. That's right. Connecticut University has shut down for the day after about 100 students fell sick in a viral-like outbreak since Thursday. State officials believe it is the norovirus, and it's behind the dozens of illnesses there. Google owner Alphabet reported first quarter sales and profit that topped financial analyst estimates due to strong ad sales and a change in accounting for investments in startups, sending its shares up 1% after hours. Today was supposed to be the day, the beginning of the end, according to a practiced doomsday sooth, David Mead. On April 23rd, 2018, Mead says the Sun, the Moon, and Jupiter will line up in the constellation Virgo. In actuality, they will not be in that constellation, an alignment that has biblical disaster written all over it, but it never happened. And the planet Uranus has clouds made up of hydrogen sulfide, the gas that gives rotten eggs their unpleasant smell. Glad we're not living on that planet. What else is going on? Let's check in with Stephen Cates, who was just a tremendous hit in our show this weekend in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, George. Wow, what a wonderful weekend, and thank you and Tom and the whole staff for having me. Boy, wasn't that amazing, George? What a response to you and all the other great guests.
It was fun. I really had a great time. I'm looking forward to my June 9th event, but we'll talk about that later.
Sure, and here's, folks, is what's happening in our sky. It's something interesting, George. Asteroid mining could be the next high ground in space, according to many. And Goldman Sachs came out with a report saying that this could indeed, if we could capture a relatively medium-sized asteroid, let's say, and tug it toward the Earth, it could create the world's first trillionaire, and that's $1,000 billion to everybody who's listening right now. But, George, this is the scoop. NASA's hoping to send a spacecraft to an asteroid called 16 Psyche. She's the princess lured by Cupid, and this in Greek mythology is a beautiful story. But the asteroid was discovered back in 1852. It's 150 miles in diameter, and what makes Psyche so fascinating is that it could be, George, the iron core of an old planet rich in minerals. Some say, get a load of this crazy astronomical number, its worth in minerals could be $10,000 quadrillion. That's a hard one to count. But the basic problem is this. How do you get an asteroid to be tugged toward the Earth? How do you mine it? And then, obviously, economically, remove those minerals so that the Earth could benefit. But it could upset the world economy. They're saying the world's economy is something like $78 trillion worldwide. But that's something maybe not of science fiction. But, George, the part the audience tells me they like, and I know you do too, the live sky, if you look at the moon now, it continues to wax, meaning it's moving on to its full phase. That happens on the 29th, the beautiful full pink moon. And here's an alert, Dr. Sky alert. If you look into the southeast sky now or in the southern sky, depending where you're listening, and it's nighttime, the planet Jupiter, George, is fascinating. So if you're looking in binoculars, here's what you're seeing in the live sky right now. On the left side of the planet, the satellite Callisto and Europa are on the left side. And on the right side, in telescopes and small binoculars, the satellite Io and Ganymede. And just remember, Ganymede is actually larger than the planet Mercury. Jupiter comes to opposition in the early part of May. We'll be talking about that. Dr. Sky reminds everyone, always remember to watch, George. Keep your eyes to the skies. Email me at Dr. Sky, that's DRSKY, at Cox.net.
Super. Thank you, Stephen. And again, great job in Scottsdale. Folks just loved him. He talked about going up in that plane that he went up with producer Tom Danheiser, Sophia, way up there, some 40,000-plus feet. Just to look at things in the night sky. Really amazing. Up next, Craig Smith joins us as we talk about your money. And wait till you hear what Craig has to say next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Craig Smith, chairman of the Swiss American Trading Company, an investment firm specializing in gold and silver coins. He founded the company back in 1982. Out of a bedroom in his home with $50. That was it. It has since grown into one of the largest and most respected firms in the industry, known for its dedication to consumer education. Craig is frequently seen on Fox News and on this program, of course, and a television guest discussing geopolitical and economic news, student of history, author of a number of books. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Well, you ready for another new year, Craig?
Sure am, George, and it's great to hear your voice. Great to be back with you. Great to hear Tom. And I felt horrible when I heard Dr. Sky say you were in Scottsdale last weekend because I happen to have been in town. So I can't.
Oh, you should have come by and said hi. We would have brought you up on stage.
Well, I'm telling you, it would have just been nice to say hello, shake your hand, and give you warm greetings in my home area. You know, I live right next door in Paradise Valley, so. It's a shame I missed you.
I got to tell you, too, Craig, Dr. Sky was telling us how much his mother wanted to come to the show, And she had passed away Friday before the Saturday event. Really sad.
His
mother, Dolores, a wonderful lady. And you know, he was a trooper. He came on. He said, "I can't quit on you, George." And you know, we said, "I said, Dr. Sky, come on now. Your mother's passed away." He said, "I'll attend to business right after this." And so
that's
he
wonderful.
Came out.
What a great guy! And he's always informative. And boy, I always feel like I get an education even after hearing just his short little commentaries that he does after the news item. So he's an amazing man.
It's been about a year and a half since you and I talked about things economically. Has anything changed in those 18 months?
Well, they sure have, George. And let's look at some of the positive things to begin with. The first 15 months of the 16-month presidency of Donald J. Trump has been very, very good, George. If you look at the rollback in regulations, if you look at jobs being created, if you look at the general upbeat pace in the economy, consumer confidence, there are a lot of positive things, George, and I was feeling very, very good about it. And while I'm not crazy about President Trump's style, you got to give him an A+ for how he's handled himself as it relates to the economy. It's been a very positive thing.
Well, what has he done, though, that some incoming president might not have done?
Well, I think he's given confidence back to the American people. He's made it okay to say that you feel like a great country again. And look, a president can't make or break an economy. He can merely create an environment in which economies can thrive or be held back. And so in giving consumers a sense of confidence and a sense of well-being, I think was very admirable, and I think really had a tremendous impact. However, George, and I wish there wasn't a however, okay, because the last time
here it comes.
We were talking about my book, Money, Morality, the Machine.
Yeah.
And sadly, I have to report to you that everything that we said in that book has come true, and in some cases, even worse than we thought would happen. But 1 month ago today, George, the whole game changed. March 23rd, 2018 will go down as another day in U.S. history as an infamous day, because that's the day when a Congress that was led by a Republican Senate and a Republican Congress and a Republican president agreed to spend $1.3 trillion, George, in the second largest spending bill we've ever had in the history of this country, that only funds the government through the end of September and has now set us off the fiscal cliff. And I hate to say this, George, and you know I'm a pretty positive guy.
I know.
There's no return from this. And I was so taken aback by it when I watched President Trump say, "Don't ever put another, I'm going to sign this, but don't ever put another bill like this in front of me." I literally went to YouTube and put a message up. I've never done that ever in the history of being in my business. I was literally, George, shaking when I did it, because there is no turning back now, George. And I want you to think about it. This is not a political issue anymore. This is a cultural issue. I want you to think about your father for just a minute. And imagine him while he is planning for the future. He is saying, "I'm going to put George and my other children in debt $174,000 that they're going to have to pay off by the time that they die." That would be reprehensible, George. It would be like you sitting down and saying, "I'm going to plan when I pass away to make sure that all my children and my grandchildren are up to their eyeballs in debt." And George, we did this with a Congress that promised the American people that they would stop spending money we don't have.
But why did they do it? And it appears both Democrats and Republicans went ahead with this.
Yes, George, and that's the thing that terrifies me. I shouldn't say terrifies me.
Sure you can.
It's gone from frightening to dangerous, George, in so much as that, you know, something that frightens you is one thing. You go to a horror movie, it frightens you, you come out, you're safe afterwards. Okay, but this is dangerous, George, because this had bipartisan support, Democrats and Republicans, in order to, quote, avert a government shutdown. Donald Trump should have said, "I'm going to veto this bill. We're going to shut the government down. You guys are going to go back to your rooms. You're going to balance this thing out. You're going to come up with an appropriate spending bill that puts into place my agenda, which was to cut spending. And, George, instead of cutting spending or even holding spending, they increase spending by 13%. Now, this will give us an $800 billion deficit this year. Starting in 2020, according to predictions by everybody from the Federal Reserve and on down, we're going to run trillion-dollar deficits for years to come.
Every president, though, Craig, I think is afraid to cut the budget.
You're absolutely right, George, and that's why I was so hopeful that Donald Trump was going to fulfill all of his campaign promises. And this is one that he can't turn back on, George, because we passed the point of no return. And this is what I'm concerned about. If the American people are upset with Donald Trump come November of 2018, and they go to the polls, and they give the Senate and the Congress back to the Charles Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, if this is the type of money we will spend under the Republican leadership, how much money are we going to spend under Democratic leadership that want to expand health care, want to expand Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, welfare, all these social programs that they think they can bring a utopia on Earth with? George, these numbers are what we are doing to future generations, George, and I don't think the average person understands this, George. We are indebting our children, which means they're going to have to pay higher taxes. They're going to have their money devalued through the printing of money, or inflation, if you will, which means they're going to have to work harder, longer, and smarter to have the same standard of living that we do, or their standard of living is going to drop dramatically. And, George, we've got to get people to understand that we are doing this to innocent children who didn't ask for this. It's not like we're spending the money on good things that are going to make their lives better.
But a lot of people, Craig, don't think that long term. They don't. They think about just today, and that's part of the problem.
You're absolutely right. And that's why, you know, this eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow we may die philosophy has to pass us in America. And I'm totally convinced now, George, that we are past the point of no return. The other day, the IMF came out with a headline that so stunned me. It said, global debt now higher than before the financial crisis of 2007. Bill Gates came out and said, it's a certainty that we're going to have another financial crisis like 2008. And I can give you lists of people like Daniel Pinto from J.P. Morgan, the co-president of J.P. Morgan, says he expects a 40% correction in the stock market. George, that would take us down to approximately 14,000 on the Dow. One day of trading, February 5th.
Is that healthy, though?
Well, I happen to believe it is because, as you know, I don't believe we should have bailed the banks out in 2007 and 8. I believe we should have allowed the strong banks to survive and the weak banks to pay the price for the mistakes that they made. I believe that good, strong corporations like Ford, for example, that didn't need public money, should have thrived, and companies like General Motors that held the gun to the government's head should have gone out of business. And people think that's a horrible thing to say, but in economics, it's called creative destruction. We have to allow business cycles to occur. The Fed can only truncate the business cycle so many times, George, before we have to pay the price. And I'm convinced now, and I hate to be so gloomy about it like this, but I've got to tell you that there is no turning back now. It's the only way I can put it is there's no way to reverse this. Look, the only way we could do it would be to grow our way out of it. We cannot grow our way out of a debt that's soon going to exceed $30 trillion on immediate debt, $150 trillion on long-term debt. And if you look in just isolation, it would be fine if it was just America. But according to Egon Greyerets over at Matterhorn, he's saying that now the world is 2.5, and this is includes derivatives as well, $4 trillion in debt. And what's the answer to it? We're going to print more money to pay for that debt. George, it's so far past where I ever thought we could go with a Republican Senate, Congress, and White House, that there is no hope. We are going to have
a day of reckoning.
It's going to happen.
Oil prices, they seem to be going out of control. Let's talk about that, Craig, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Let me tell you about our upcoming events, and of course the one that we just had in Scottsdale, Arizona, Saturday with producer Tom Danheiser. That was fun, Tommy.
You know, I don't know what I like better, the show or the crowd afterwards, the meet and greet. Such nice people.
They are so into this program and just into what we do, and they're just great people, and some of them came from way, way out.
You know, I talked to a couple that drove like 3 hours, and I constantly see people make friends, new people. They don't know them. They take pictures for each other, exchange emails. It's quite a thing.
It's great. And as you know, the meet and greet, we don't leave until the last person has had his meet and greet.
Everybody.
Or hers.
You know, we see everybody.
We sure do. It's a fun time. Had a great time. The guests were great, and everything just flowed perfectly.
So good stuff.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Next one's up. June 9th in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Silverton Casino. We're looking forward to this one. George Knapp's going to be with me, our investigative journalist and co-host, ufologist John Greenwald, Danyon Brinkley, Adam Garcia, a little 13-year-old boy who's got healing powers with his crystal grid. It's an amazing story, and we'll have a live band and singing and all kinds of things. Full information at coasttocoastam.com in the events section at the top of the homepage or in the carousel. And then, of course, Asheville, North Carolina. We just announced it last week, and tickets are going out the window so fast they can't keep track of it. That's Saturday, August 25th. The Rocket Man, David Adair, joins us along with ufologist Micah Hanks. William Forstchen will be talking about the power grid, and apparently the nation is now starting to talk about protecting the power grid, and we've been at this for several years now. Joshua P. Warren, the paranormal investigator and spiritual teacher, Vincent Jenna, joins us along again with the live band and all that. So we're going to have some fun in Asheville, and you can get your tickets there by going to coasttocoastam.com. It's at the Diana Wortham Theater, and you can go to their website, which is DW Theater, spelled with T-H-E-A-T-R-E, dwtheater.com, or simply go to coasttocoastam.com and click the events. And welcome back to Coast, Craig Smith with us. We'll take calls with Craig next hour. Craig, I noticed when I was in St. Louis, oil was reasonable. Gasoline prices were okay. I come back to Los Angeles, and it's, you know, sticker shock. It's crazy. What's going on?
Yeah, well, part of that has to do with summer blends, George. But I'm really glad you brought oil up, because that's a critical component in everything that we've been talking about. Every penny that a price of a gallon of gas goes up takes $1 billion out of the economy, or if it drops one penny, it adds $1 billion to the buying power of the economy. We've seen oil prices creep up to around $70 a barrel. And, you know, people will argue that's because the Saudis have played with output and so on and so forth. Good news is we're the largest oil producer in the world now, which
that's right.
Is great. We're basically independent. However, the world does depend on oil coming from other parts of the world. But this is why it's such a critical part, George. Let's backtrack a little bit and talk about that debt. How did we normally deal with the debt? We would create treasury bills. The treasury bills were denominated in U.S. dollars. The world had to go out and buy U.S. dollars in order to buy their oil. Well, 3 days after that infamous date, March 23rd, 2018, and I hope your listeners write it down, because in history it will be as important as September 11th, 2001, or even, I dare say, December 7th, 1941. 3 days later, March 26th, the Chinese opened up the Yuan Oil Trade Exchange in the Shanghai markets. You can now buy oil with yuan, therefore you no longer need to buy U.S. dollars. So if we have to start the printing presses again, which we're going to have to do to create all this money that we don't have to spend, traditionally that money would be mopped up by the rest of the world and therefore wouldn't have inflation. This time that's not going to happen, because nations can buy their oil with other currencies. And that's where the real rub is. That's why, you know, George, I've written 10 books. And I had to stop writing books and go to reports, because things are happening so rapidly. Matter of fact, my latest report, The Crashless Society, Connecting the Dots to Prepare for Future Markets, is all about how all these things tie together now, George. And there's no reversing it now. There's no simple solution. And, you know, I heard in the break you talked about we'll always recover from this. You're right. That's why I called this report The Crashless Society, because we mapped the crisis in 07 when the Knickerbocker Trust Company went down. We survived. We survived Black Tuesday in 1929. We survived Black Monday in 1987. We survived the Great Recession of 2008. And in this report, I lay out that we will survive this. There's no doubt about it. But there's going to be a lot of pain because people forget in 2008, George, $19 trillion worth of wealth was wiped off the books in the United States of America. And just in this recent trading, February 5th, we had a 1,600-point swing in the market, $114 billion lost in one day. And, oh, and by the way, George, you know my reports are always free to your listeners if they just go to our website, SwissAmerica.com, and click on that little radio microphone and click on George Norrie, and you can get the report right online, or you can call the offices and get a complimentary copy. There's never a charge to a Coast listener.
And, Craig, the people who are at home listening right now, and they hear this economic news, and they're saying to themselves, all right, but how does this affect me? What do you say to them?
Let me tell you how, and I laid this out in the report very clearly how it's going to affect you. And I know people are going to think that I'm overemphasizing this, and I'm not, because if you could see my desk right now, George, I base all this on facts. I base all this on data from the Federal Reserve, from the IMF, from the banks, their own writings. As you know, my books have more footnotes than most books that are printed out there nowadays. How this is going to affect the average person is we are going to have a collapse of the banking system. That's why you've seen this proliferation of cryptocurrencies. Okay, think about it, George. What is a Bitcoin worth? Is it worth $1 million? Is it worth $1? Is it worth $8,000 like they say today? What is backing it? What's the difference between it and a fiat currency?
There's nothing. Nothing backing it.
Exactly. We have become accustomed to having illusionary assets. The money that you have sitting in the bank, and we discussed this the last time, George. As a matter of fact, I think we may have broke this on Coast, and that was the money that is sitting in the bank now, as of when we changed the Dodd-Frank rules, that money is no longer your asset. It is the bank's asset, and it's dependent on them deciding to give it back to you. Go look at the fine print of the paperwork that you signed with your bank. They're no longer bailouts, George. They're now bail-ins. They will only give you your money back when they are good and ready to give you your money back. And I can show you conclusive evidence that we're far worse off today. And the IMF backs me up on this. We are past the debt levels we were that caused the crisis in 2007 and 2008. And that's why I tried to put this little simple 5-6 page or whatever it is report together so that people would understand if your bank goes down, okay, you don't keep all your money in the bank, but what if you have stocks you need to cash out? You traditionally have a check sent to you and it goes into the bank. I'm sure it'll be cash, but will it take a day? Will it take 2 days, 3 days, 4 days? What if we have to run the printing presses? And obviously we don't physically run printing presses anymore. We just put more zeros on the computers. But what happens if we have a hyperinflationary bout like they had in Weimar Germany? Germany's still there, okay, but quite a bit different, and it caused a Second World War. Look at what happened in Venezuela recently. We think those type of things can't happen to us, George. They do. And so for the average person that's listening tonight, be prepared to not pay an average of $2.76 for a gallon of gasoline. Be prepared to spend $6 or $7 a gallon. If your weekly groceries are costing you $100, be prepared to spend $300. If your electric bill is $150, be prepared to spend $450. And most people, unless they've made the proper adjustments to accommodate that type of price inflation, George, are going to really struggle. They're not going to die in the streets. You know, this is not, you know, time that it's the end of the world, for Pete's sakes, like you said. We will survive this. But, George, we have to go through a global reset. Things have become ridiculous.
But it's healthy. Resets are healthy, aren't they, Craig?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wish we had done it in 2008. I was on Fox News. I did CNN, a couple other programs, begging, don't listen to what Hank Paulson is saying. Let this thing go down. George, if we remember correctly, it was 3 weeks of Congress debating that stupid TARP bailout bill.
Yeah.
And we survived it. But when they added $80 billion worth of pork barrel spending, all of a sudden, they passed the bill. We could have survived, George, without the government getting involved. And you and I have talked about it before. Government can mess up a one-piece puzzle, for Pete's sakes. This is a time where we need to allow the markets to do what markets do. They blow out excesses. They bring real values. George, look at housing in California, for heaven's sakes.
It's still crazy.
People can't afford to live there anymore.
No,
okay, and this is happening literally across the country, with the exception of maybe Texas. And so how does it affect the average person? One of two things. We're either going to have a massive collapse, which we'll survive, or we're going to have inflation that runs like just like we saw during the Carter years, or maybe higher. And this is why I'm so disappointed with President Trump. He could have stopped this. He could have stopped the insanity. We need the politicians to be honest with the American people. And that's why I said at the beginning of the program, George, culture should dictate our politics, not politics dictating our culture. We've lost the sense of doing the right thing in America, George, evidenced by what we're doing to our kids and our grandkids, for Pete's sakes. And so I know this sounds very complicated and it sounds tedious, but that's why I put this simple report together, so people could understand that if you connect the dots, this is not rocket science, and there are ways to prepare yourself for it. So, if you want a printed copy of it, just call 800-289-2646, or if you just want to download it off the internet, just go to SwissAmerica.com and click on the radio mic, and you'll see George's picture there. Pretty handsome picture, by the way, George. And
Photoshop does wonderful things.
And you know what we did, George, in this report? You'll love this. You know how they have the Dow 30, the Dow Jones Industrial Average of 30 stocks that they choose for the Dow? Well, what we did was we did a couple phone calls to average people, and we said, tell me the companies that just come to the top of your mind, and Apple, Microsoft, Pfizer, Home Depot. We did our own pick of a top 30. We just randomly picked 30 stocks, George, and we didn't pick the selected stocks that the Dow uses. Guess what we found, George? Out of 30 stocks we picked, 20 of those stocks, George, have lost money this year. Only 10 of them have gone up.
Wow. See, the perception is they all went up.
You bet. And I don't even know how to put it into words, George, and I'm probably blowing it being this emotional about it. But if you could see the information that is sitting on my desk right now, George, I literally have to grab the American people by the collar and say, look, this isn't the end of the world, but you've got to pay attention to this. You've got to have a plan to make sure you leave your children something so that when they get hit with this bill, they can pay it. Because I can't think of anything more, what's the word I'm looking for, George? More unmanly, if you will. And maybe some feminists are going to take exception to that. But I couldn't imagine indenturing my children to a runaway government that is spending more money than we take in, that is buying everything.
Well, not unmanly, but it's your duty as a father.
Absolutely. And, you know, since we've talked, I have my first grandchild, by the way.
Oh, congratulations.
As a matter of fact, maybe we...
I've got six.
She was just... You're a lucky guy. Well, hopefully we got the second on the way. We're waiting for a call any day now. But now that I have a grandchild, I started looking at... See, I already figured I had planned well enough for my two daughters. But now that I have a granddaughter, I've got another generation to plan for. And so when I started digging, that's why I said I'm writing these reports now, because things are breaking so rapidly, I can't take the normal 6-8 months process to write a book. I'm in the process of finishing up another report called the Secret War on Cash, which I think we've talked about before,
mm-hmm.
but we've done an updated version, and we call it Weapons of Cash Destruction.
Craig, give me your take. If everything works out with this planned meeting with North Korea, and everything works out, and he indeed says, now see, all he's done so far, and I hope everybody understands this, he said he's going to stop his nuke testing and shut down his nuke testing site. He didn't say he was going to dismantle his nukes.
That's right.
He hasn't said that yet. But if everything works out and he just shuts down his whole nuke program and there's peace there with the North, what does that do to the economy here?
Well, it would have a positive impact on the economy, but it's too late, George. It doesn't matter. It's like if you were $10 million in debt and you had $100,000 a year income, and all of a sudden you started making $125,000 a year income.
Doesn't matter.
You still can't service the $10 million worth of debt. George, you can write this down. You can hold me accountable to this. We're getting ready to have the largest reset we've ever seen in the history of this nation. People forget we've had these resets before in our economy. We had them in the 1800s. We had them at 1907, the turn of the century.
Would you call 2008 a reset?
It would have been a reset if we had allowed it to collapse.
We didn't. We propped it up.
You bet. We allowed people to walk away from their mortgages. We allowed the real estate market clearly reset. But look at where it is now. The banks are up to the same shenanigans. Hey, George, you're starting to hear the commercials again. Take an equity loan out on your house. Interest rates are going up.
Yeah, yeah. It's happened all over again.
It's almost
subprime loans.
Yeah, and, you know, history may not repeat itself, George, but it's sure rhyming this time. And when you have the IMF come out and say that world debt just exceeded the levels that we hit in 2007, and then you look at the Case-Shiller numbers, and I don't want to get too wonky with your listeners, and you look at the price of housing versus the price at the S&P on the stocks, and then you look at the debt accumulation that we have. George, we have $164 trillion worldwide debt. I'm talking about just not taking all the derivatives out, taking all the long-term liabilities out. Just money that we owe in the short term is $164 trillion. George, spending $1 a second, it takes 32,000 years to spend $1 trillion, for heaven's sakes.
Mm.
Okay, we don't understand, because, see, the numbers are so big, George, they don't mean anything anymore to people. And people say, well, we'll get through it. You know, we got through it in 07. We got through it in 29. Yes. And in 07, a lot of people were bankrupt and put out on the street, and a lot of people made fortunes. There's going to be people standing in the bread line and people standing in the buffet line. And that's why I'm so grateful that you cover topics like this, George, because if people are informed and they put the dots together and they read reports and spend a little time doing some simple planning and not panicking, they'll be standing in the buffet line versus the bread line. That's why I've always made my books or my reports free on your program, because you have gone out and informed the people. The least I can do is back those efforts up and say, here's the information George wants you to look at. You draw your own conclusions. It's going to happen.
You're an expert on gold and silver. What's going to happen there?
Well, obviously, when the inflation starts to hit, gold is going to come back with a vengeance. I'm not big on making predictions on the price of gold. You know that. I've always shied away from that.
I know that.
It's almost kind of self-serving. I never thought I would live long enough to hear myself say that some of these wild predictions that I've heard of $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 gold are very legitimate prices, because I'm convinced that the reason why the Russians have stockpiled gold and the Chinese have stockpiled gold and all the central banks have stockpiled
and
gold.
And India too.
Yes, and they're doing it because they know there's going to be a global reset on the currencies. And why do banks hold gold in reserves? If gold is so archaic and it's not necessary, then why does every single central bank own gold, for Pete's sake?
Because one day it will be.
I know it's going to happen. It's no longer, I think it could happen. It went from being frightening, George, to it's dangerous now. And when something is dangerous, if you don't get out of the way, you get hurt. And George, the super rich, do you think really Jeff Bezos is going to care whether he goes from $100 billion to $50 billion? I don't think he's going to really care.
No, he's not going to be happy, but he's not going to go crazy.
You bet. And the person that's on welfare, quite frankly, they're not going to lose anything. It's going to be the middle class, which it is all the time. We're all the majority of the money in the world is anyway, right in the middle. And those are going to be the people, once again, the hardworking, honest, tax-paying people who will play by the rules, who get ripped off just like they did in 2007 and 2008. And if I have any say about it with my reports, I'm going to try and get as many of those people as I can out of harm's way. That doesn't mean getting out of the stock market. It just means having a longer-term approach to the stock market. It means having insurance policies in place. George, I can make a solid prediction on this program right now. We're going to enter the longest bear market we've ever seen in bonds in the history of the bond market.
Let's write that down. We're going to come back in a moment, Craig. We'll take phone calls with you and chat more about what you see in the months to years ahead.